Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Good morning, listeners. Well, you know, I've been saying for the last 3 weeks how excited I am to have my guest, Clara Lee Charlton, with me today. Good morning.
Good morning, Jill. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome. We're going to cover some things today, Clara Lee, that I think our listeners absolutely need to know. But let's start with who you are.
Sure.
Who you work for, what you do.
Sure. Well, my name is Clara Lee Charlton, and I am an attorney with Katz, Look, and Honorado. And I predominantly work with families around the time when a loved one has passed away. So I help them gather the assets, determine what needs to happen, whether probate needs to be filed. And I frequently advise clients on tax issues, which is one of the main reasons that Jill had me here today.
Right. And we just need to let our listeners know that you're not actually giving legal advice today, right?
Correct. So don't think that because you're listening today, we've established an attorney-client relationship. Everyone's individual situation needs to be analyzed because the facts of your family might be different than the facts of others. But a lot of the information we'll be discussing is really just general tax advice for individuals that you can then take to perhaps your own attorney or to give me a call and we can discuss whether that's applicable to your situation.
Absolutely. And we're going to get into what if you need to sell your loved one's house, what about gifts from mom, dad, so on and so forth, husbands, fathers, moms, all that kind of stuff a little bit later. But let's talk about some specific questions that we put together over lunch that were questions from my listeners.
Exactly.
And I just think this is great. I love listener feedback. I love it when we can take all those questions and answer them. So one of the things that they've asked me is if they need advice when a loved one has dementia and the family's just finding out, they don't know how they're going to pay for care. They have all these different questions. There's a lot of problems and uncertainty, and people make some mistakes right from the get-go.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Exactly. So one big question that comes up is whether a parent needs to file a tax return. And this question can even be a little more broad as whether you listening need to file a tax return because you may just, you're not working anymore, you're just receiving Social Security income, and you say, well, do I need to even file a tax return?
Right.
Or does my parent need to file a tax return? And the general rule is if your only source of income is from Social Security, you do not need to file a tax return. Or if your if the taxpayer had no income at all during the year, there's really no reason to file a return. I also like people to know if they actually do need a return filed. There are many sites across Denver, across the country, actually, that will prepare your tax return for free.
Wow.
I hate it when individuals say, oh, I just paid $250 to have my tax return prepared. There's a lot of sites called VITA sites, V-I-T-A,
okay.
And there's also sites run by AARP that will prepare your return for free. And come tax time, give a call to the number 211, and that is a national number. You give them your zip code, and they'll tell you the closest location for the preparation. So call in January or February to get that information.
And what was that number again?
It's 211.
There you go.
Similar to 911, but for social services of 211.
Excellent. Now, here's a question that I have received from a listener. What if I need to file on behalf of my parent? Can I do that?
Yes. So if a child or an agent has a power of attorney that specifically states that that individual has the power to file a tax return or talk to the IRS on behalf of that individual has that power. Now, very broad and general powers of attorney will not work for that power. The IRS says it actually has, the power of attorney has to have a phrase in it that says the agent has the power to file tax returns, talk to the IRS. A general power of attorney that just says, my agent can do everything and anything, that's not good enough for the IRS. Okay. And there's a couple forms that the agent might want to know about before they try to call into the IRS, and that's Form 2848 and Form 56. Oftentimes, the IRS will ask the agent, hey, have you filed those forms? And so you'll want to be sure that those forms are filed before you start acting on behalf of the taxpayer.
Okay. And, you know, we talked about this before we came on the air, that a lot of our listeners don't have computers. And so this is my chance to say, grab that pen and paper and write this down. Name those forms one more time.
So the Form 2848, that's the IRS's special power of attorney that grants the agent power to talk to the IRS and act on their behalf. And then Form 56 is an agency agreement. So if you want to start getting IRS mail on behalf of the taxpayer to make sure that you're informed as to what's going on, that's a great form to file and have with the IRS.
Great. You know, people get concerned about powers of attorney in general. Let's just talk about what that role is. A person can have a power of attorney and use it to help with finances and things like that. But generally, a power of attorney is to be utilized in a way that they're trying to assist a person that is incapacitated or unable to make decisions on their own because of some cognitive impairment, which our listeners know all about with dementia and Alzheimer's and different types of dementia,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. So there's two kinds of powers of attorney. One can be effective immediately. So while I have all my faculties, I just want somebody to help me out because I'd like to sit at home and watch The Price is Right instead of doing my taxes. There's that kind of power of attorney.
Okay.
Then there's another one that can come into effect when you are incapacitated. And that's oftentimes called a springing power of attorney. So it has no effect while you have all your faculties. But as soon as you are deemed incapacitated, your agent can start balancing your checkbook, writing checks, doing taxes for you, paying your property tax, different things like that.
Right. That's great. Those are really, truly things that people don't know about and don't know what to do. Is there anything else in that area that you want to mention?
Yeah, I just want to remind people, a power of attorney has to be signed by the individual granting it while they have their faculties. So if an individual has proceeded far enough along the lines of, say, Alzheimer's disease, they may not currently have the ability to sign a power of attorney and grant an agent all those powers. So it's definitely something that the family wants to think about ahead of time, not wait until it's too late, because then you're looking into guardianships and conservatorships, which are much more expensive and time-consuming.
Right. Just real quick, can you explain those two, guardianship and conservatorship?
Yeah. So if a child wants to take care of their parents' finances or make medical decisions for them, and the parent is already incapacitated and can't grant the power to that child voluntarily, the court has to give the child that power.
Okay.
And there's a small hearing where the court determines whether the person is indeed incapacitated and whether the person requesting a guardianship is the most appropriate agent.
Okay. And then a conservatorship?
So guardianship is specifically for medical decisions and housing decisions. A conservatorship is over the money decision. So oftentimes it's the same person doing the same thing, but sometimes the duties are divided between a couple individuals.
Okay.
So perhaps a daughter would care for mom on a daily basis, take her to the doctor, whereas the son might balance the checkbook, take care of taxes, things like that.
Okay. Wow. That's awesome. I'm telling you, these are things people don't know and they need to know. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk about the really important questions that we all deal with at a certain time in life, dealing with my parents' house. What do we do when they're getting ready to go into a community? Do we need to sell it? We're going to hear a word from our sponsor, Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center, and we'll be back in just a minute to have that discussion.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you will ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Living with purpose and meaning is the best reward at Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. Your loved one will live life to its fullest. licensed nurses on staff 24 hours a day, compassionate caregivers, 3 well-balanced meals, and 3 healthy snacks are a few key elements of the JEA difference. We also offer fully furnished private and semi-private rooms, meaningful activities, and scheduled outings. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
I'm back with Clara Lee Charlton. So excited to have you here.
Thank you.
Let's get into the hard subject. I have to deal with my parents' house. Uh-oh. What do I do now? Or sister's house, or brother's house, or just relative's house, loved one's house.
Or maybe your own house.
Yeah, tax consequences.
Yeah, so there's always the question of parents are aging, they own a house, we don't know how long they might still be living in it, or maybe they're going to move out of it soon. And the question comes up, when or should we sell mom or dad's house?
Maybe to pay for their care.
Exactly.
Can they do that?
They can. So first I want to just talk a little bit about taxes and ownership of homes.
Okay.
So when you buy your house, your purchase price is called your tax basis. Mm-hmm. And that number is used to calculate any gain or loss on a future sale. So if I buy a house for $100,000 and then a couple years later down the road, I sell it for $250,000. That's not uncommon here in Denver with the real estate market.
Right.
So the difference between my purchase price of $100,000 and my sale price of $250,000, that's my gain. And I am subject to income tax on that gain.
Wow.
Now, the IRS has a nice rule for people selling their personal residences that they have an exclusion of $250,000 per taxpayer for that gain. So the IRS says, well, we don't want to keep punishing folks every time they sell their house and taking a piece of that. So they can have gain of $250,000 before we'll start taxing it. So
okay.
If the gain is less than that, there's not going to be any tax paid. And for a married couple, you get 2 times the $250,000, so $500,000. So you can have gain of $500,000 and not pay any income tax, which is great.
Yeah.
Great benefit. And for a lot of taxpayers, they're going to fit within that exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
So if mom or dad needs to go to assisted living and they have a house that has appreciated, we'll want to start having that conversation about selling the house early on, either before they move out or within 3 years of them moving out. Because in order to get that exclusion, you have to live and own your house for the past, live in and own your house for the past two of the past 5 years.
Okay.
So it's a little calculation. So we can be out of the house for up to 3 years and still qualify. So if you need to, if you want that exclusion, you'll need to start thinking about selling the house in that time period.
Why would you not want to sell it?
So some reasons that you may not want to sell it. If mom is still living there and she's planning on qualifying for Medicaid, her personal residence is exempt from the asset limitations that Medicaid provides.
Okay.
So you may not want to give it up just now. Perhaps dad is still living the house, but mom has moved into assisted living.
Right.
And Medicaid is involved. You may not want to sell the house at that point because dad's still living there and it still is qualifying for that Medicaid exclusion.
Okay.
So that's another reason you don't want to sell it.
Okay.
One other thing that I like to tell people is if mom or dad is going to perhaps, they haven't been living there for a while, they've already been in assisted living for a while and they don't qualify for that $250,000 exclusion anymore. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say this, but if mom or dad is perhaps not doing well and they may be going to pass away soon, there's an provision under the Internal Revenue Code that allows for an adjustment of that tax basis when someone passes away.
Okay.
So if I originally bought that house for $100,000 in Denver, it might be worth $500,000 by now.
Right.
And we've got a huge tax gain there, $400,000.
Right.
Mom and dad, they've been living in assisted living for quite a while. The house has just been kind of sitting vacant, or maybe a son or daughter has moved in for a while. That's pretty common scenario.
That happens. Absolutely.
So if mom and dad or just one of them is going to pass away, we may want to hold on to the asset until afterwards, because the IRS will adjust that basis to the fair market value as of date of death and erase all the taxable gain.
Wow, that is huge for people to know.
It's a really great benefit.
And I'm going to be the listener sitting in the car right now going, whoa, this was a little confusing. What'd she just say? We want to make sure at the end of the show that you give your name, your number, your email address, so that people can ask you questions tomorrow, call you tomorrow,
exactly,
and let you know. And they can certainly email me, Jill at Summit Resilience Training, or call me at 303-999-1961, and I'll forward the information to Clara Lee. Those are huge things. Wow. So a house increasing in value can be a big deal. Some folks may think, well, this is my inheritance. Well, another loved one might be thinking, we've got to pay for mom or dad's care.
Exactly. And I always try to remind folks, don't let the tax tail wag the dog. We don't want mom and dad holding on to the house but eating top ramen until they die, because they don't want to sell the house. It's because they want to leave it to their kids. I always say, if mom and dad need the money, they worked hard for that. That is their house. We need to sell it so that we can put some cash in their bank account so that they are not really struggling through their last years of life.
Right.
Don't hold on to it for the wrong reason. Yes, you might need to pay a little bit of tax, and you can certainly try to take advantage of some of the exclusions that we mentioned.
Right.
So don't let mom and dad fall into poverty just to keep the house so that they can leave it to the kids.
Right. Now let's talk about those exclusions. To claim the exclusion, your parent has to be the named seller.
Correct. Correct. So
yeah,
when they make that sale, they need to be on the title. They need to be signing off, or the agent on their behalf.
Okay.
Perhaps they are incapacitated already, but you have a power of attorney that grants you the power to sell. That is perfectly fine as long as their name is on the title. But
okay,
so frequently, as I think you and I have discussed, parents want to add their child to the title of the house,
right,
or just give the child the house because they say, oh, they're going to get it anyways. I'm just going to do it early. And there's some real, I actually have four top reasons why not to give your house to your children.
Okay, go.
Those reasons are, first, by transferring it, you don't get that $250,000 exclusion because your child hasn't owned and lived in the house for two out of the past 5 years.
Right.
So you don't get that. So if your child then needs to sell it the next year, they have all that gain.
Okay.
They also take on your tax basis. So if you paid $100,000 for it and then it's sold, your child has the same $100,000 quote-unquote purchase price.
Right.
So they're going to calculate the gain the same as you would. Unlike when the death occurs, it's adjusted to the fair market value.
Okay. And number three?
Three is, it's a taxable gift. So you might have to file a gift tax return, which may not be something that you anticipated.
Right.
And lastly, by adding your child to the title, you're now subjecting the asset to your child's creditors. So if your child is sued or perhaps is getting a divorce,
mm-hmm,
that asset now belongs to your child, and it may get wound up in a divorce proceeding.
Ooh.
Or be subject to creditors. So you want to be very careful. You just never know what might crop up in your child's life.
Right? That's rough. Wow.
Exactly.
Great information. I told people this is exactly why I was excited to have you here today. These are things we don't know. and mistakes we can make and probably often make. But we have a lot more to talk about, consequences of gifting a house and things like that. But we're going to take a break, listen to a word from our sponsor, and we will be right back. Get that pen and paper out.
Making the decision to place your loved one in the care of others is one of the most difficult decisions you'll ever have to make. If that someone special is in your life and is needing memory care, Bellevue Heights is the place to call home. Bellevue Heights, part of the JEA Senior Living family, is deeply committed to serving people living with Alzheimer's and other related dementias. Bellevue Heights believes that supporting families and caregivers is just as important as caring for our residents. We offer free monthly support groups, education and lecture series, and presentations by experts in Alzheimer's and dementia care. All of our programs are free and open to the public. Call Bellevue Heights at 303-690-0700 to learn more about the high standard of individualized care they can offer your loved one. And ask about our current and upcoming education opportunities and support groups. Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center is located at 14500 East Bellevue Avenue in Aurora. Visit jeaseniorliving.com or call 303-690-0700 to schedule a tour. Come home to family. Come home to Bellevue Heights.
Welcome to Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz, sponsored by Bellevue Heights Alzheimer's Special Care Center. A candid conversation as we learn about dementia, Alzheimer's, and its effects on the people we love. Jill's years of dedication and experience help you adapt, recover, overcome obstacles, and help find a positive outcome. It's time for Dementia Resilience with Jill Lorenz.
Here with Clara Lee Charlton, and she's given us some awesome information this morning. I am so happy you're here. Let's get back knee-deep into this. So income tax deductions for assisted living. So now your loved one needs medical care, right?
Exactly.
And a person with Alzheimer's may need to be supervised. They may need some additional supplemental care.
Absolutely.
Now what?
So we all file income taxes, and we all love deductions. So I put together a few of these top deductions that I think are most applicable to Jill's audience. So assisted living is a big one. It's very expensive, but it can be an amazing medical deduction for individuals on their income tax returns.
Oh, that's good news.
So if I need to go into assisted living, and the reason I'm going into assisted living is because I need medical care. The primary reason I'm there is because I need help with bathing, right, taking my medications, then my room and board plus all my medical care is a medical deduction. So I have a gentleman and he was paying $6,000 a month for his medical care. He had to live in the facility. He couldn't live on his own. We were able to take that as a medical deduction, 6,000 times 12 months, and it was a great, great deduction. He never paid income tax.
That's
We're
huge.
Always able to get him a nice refund at the end of the year.
Right.
So, and the same goes if you have a nurse coming into your home to help you bathe, help you take your medications. Her wages would be deductible. Now, if she's also helping make you some meals or do some dishes, that portion would not be deductible as a medical expense. But the portion of her wage that goes towards actually helping with medical care does qualify as a medical deduction.
And how would they break that out? Just
If you have just a little contract with her that says, you know, I'm doing 2 hours a day, medical, 2 hours a day, household chores, and you divide it in half or however much time she's spending, that would be sufficient evidence.
Okay, cool. Great.
Yeah.
So how about in-home care that is just there to keep up the residence and help with household chores?
Yeah, if it's purely assistance with mowing the lawn, keeping the house tidy, that would not be deductible as a medical expense. But I always remind people, it's not just what the taxpayer is paying. It could also be a child. So if a parent is living with you and you're paying for a home health care aide to come in and take care of mom or dad for a few hours a day, making sure they're getting their medications.
Exactly.
The child, if the child's paying that, they can take that on their tax return if the parent qualifies as, it's called a medical dependent. So as long as the child is paying for those things, they can take those deductions themselves instead of the parent taking them. Because Clearly. The parent might not need to file a tax return.
Right. You are awesome. People are wanting to know these things. So how about adult day programs?
So adult day programs, if the adult is considered disabled, so an individual perhaps with advanced Alzheimer's, they'd be considered disabled. If they're going, being picked up every morning in a little bus and being taken to some programming, that is also a medical deduction. But it can also qualify for a dependent care credit if it's enabling the taxpayer to go work. So if I need my parent to be taken care of while I'm out working, mm-hmm. I might be able to take the dependent care credit instead of a medical deduction.
Okay.
So that might be a better bang for your buck.
Now, does the person actually have to be qualified as disabled? Do they have to go through the process to become disabled?
So the IRS has a slightly different definition of disabled,
okay.
as opposed to perhaps your definition of disabled for certain other benefits.
Okay.
So definitely want to chat with your tax preparer about which one you qualify for and what's going to give you the best benefit
okay.
tax-wise.
All right. And they do have to be a citizen.
So that's actually going down to, can I claim my parent as a dependent?
Oh, all right.
So, you know, we have children dependents. We're used to that, claiming them as a dependent, getting that exemption, which is a great tax benefit.
Mm-hmm.
It can save you a lot of money. But you can also claim your parent as a deduction. So it's the life cycle. They claimed you, now you claim them.
it's a reverse, right?
Exactly.
And how about food, clothing, things like that?
So in order to claim your parent as a dependent, there are five tests. So one, they need to be related to you. Your parent, they probably meet that.
You're okay, right.
They need to either be a U.S. citizen or a resident of Canada or Mexico.
Okay.
They can't file a joint return. And they can't have gross income over $4,050.
Okay.
And then you actually have to provide over half your parents' support. So if they're living with you, you're paying for their food, clothing, you're paying the mortgage.
Okay. Wow.
Then if they meet those five criteria, then you can claim them as a deduction on your own tax return.
Do they actually have to live with you?
They actually do not. So
wow.
as long as those
Huge.
Five criteria are met, if you're still paying half their support, so maybe you're helping them out by paying their utilities at their house or you're paying their rent,
mm-hmm.
You can still claim them as a dependent. They actually do not have to live in your home.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and do a couple community announcements. I want you to think about anything that we didn't talk about that you want to have as a closing comment for my listeners, and also get that pen and paper ready, because she's going to give her information on how you can contact her. But we have a new person to the family today. April's my new producer. We're super excited about April being with us from now on. We didn't lose Hank, but he's just going to be here intermittently back and forth. So April's going to join me in the conversation. Now, next week, my conversation is going to be a conversation with the listeners. We're going to talk about some things that you all call me and tell me you need to know about, strategies and techniques for working with difficult behaviors or bathing, or we're going to find some fun things to talk about. Also, if you want to meet me live in person, Cruisin' 1430 KEZW, our parent station, is actually having the Art of Aging Expo that's going to be at Arapahoe Community College on August 5th. It will be from 8 a.m. I think they're opening the doors at 8 a.m. until around 1 or 2. They're going to have a band there. Health One is going to provide some testing and diagnostic testing, blood pressure, things like that. There will be over 50 exhibitors. It's going to be great. And I'm going to be there with my sponsor, Nikki from Bellevue Heights. And I'd love it if y'all come out and say hello, meet us. We'll have a little giveaway for you. And we're excited to have you come up and introduce yourselves and let us know what you like about the show, what you think we need to talk more about, and things like that. So welcome, April. Glad to have you here, doll. And Clara Lee, you've been awesome, girl.
Thank
what
you.
Else do you have for us? How can we, what do you need to tell us? Tell us your address, not your address, your email address and your phone number.
Yes. Yeah, so if listeners have follow-up questions on any of these topics, they can reach me. My phone number is 303-832-1900.
Say that one more time.
303- 832-1900, or they can go to my website, the www.thedenverlawyers.com. Okay. That's nice and easy, www.thedenverlawyers.com.
Excellent. And we've got about 40 seconds. Last thought?
You know, I always just like to remind people, if you're thinking about a big ticket transaction, something that you have questions about, it's always easier to ask before you do, because a lot of transactions can't be undone, and some of the tax consequences associated with those transactions are pretty significant. So I always say it's always better to just take a moment, ask the question, and then proceed,
okay,
as opposed to asking afterwards.
Excellent. And if you need any help from me, you want a consultation in-home, you want to attend a class or come to an event that I have, www.summitresiliencetraining.com. And 303-999-1961. I'll get you to all those resources you need to be at. All right? Have a great weekend, everybody.